स्व तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। मे वी मेडिटेट ऑन दैट सुप्रीम बीइंग हु ड्वेल्स इन द हार्ट्स ऑफ ऑल। He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts, and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace. Peace, peace. We have been studying the Viveka Chudamani, or crest jewel of discrimination, by the great seer philosopher Shankara. You see, this is not considered as a scripture, but it has the authority of a scripture. You see, these books or treatises were written by a man of God. He attained that illumined knowledge of God, and then he wrote down his experiences and tried to make us understand, and also showed us the ways and methods by which we can have the same experience. Now, of course, in the Upanishads, he always refers to the Upanishads naturally, because Upanishads are the revelations, eternal revelations, that is, eternal truths. They are not, cannot be said to be given by any particular individual. That is, in other words, they are eternal truths which you and I also can discover. They are discovered by seers and sages. For instance, there is this law of gravitation. It is an eternal physical law. It was not created by anybody, but it was discovered by Newton. That doesn't mean that Newton made this law of gravitation. Similarly, the truth of God is an eternal truth. And it was discovered by seers and sages, and they recorded their experiences. And then again, they have told us how to attain such experiences. But they cannot claim them to be their own. They are the truth of God. Now, we have already seen that in this path of knowledge that this Shankara is teaching us, there are three steps. First is hearing. Then reasoning upon it, and ultimately meditating upon that truth, and then realizing it, experiencing it. Then it points out that you cannot experience that truth until you become absorbed and rise above the three states of consciousness: waking, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. See, you have to reach the transcendental consciousness. You have to transcend the body, senses, mind, and reach that. You see, God can be seen, God can be known, God can be experienced, but not with these eyes, not with these senses. And so, nobody has seen God while he's awake, or while he's asleep, or while he's dreaming. Now you first hear the truth. Thou art that, or aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman. But what is this I? And what is this Brahman? This has to be reasoned upon, analyzed. Not so easy to understand. And even if you understand, you don't know it. Until you experience. And so this analysis is begun now. The waking state, dreamless sleep state, what is this body? What is the mind? What the senses and sense organs are? Is the Atman any of these? No. So that analysis we are beginning. First, he says, the physical body. The physical body is composed of the gross elements which are formed by a fivefold compound of their subtle elements. Now, of course, this is a little complicated thing to understand unless you know a little philosophical, until you have a philosophical background. You see, there are five elements. There are five elements that compose this physical universe. These five elements are earth, air, water, ether, and fire. Now, when we say earth, water, ether, fire, you see, it doesn't mean that what we see, this earth, for instance, is just earth. It has all the five elements in it. Earth, air, water, ether and fire are combined subtle elements. You can't see them. The yogis can see them. But you can't see them. But they are subtle elements. And these subtle elements, say these five elements. Earth is composed of all the five elements, only the earth part is more than the other elements. Same way with fire or ether or water. And I can't remember the proportions. You know, I studied when I was a young boy and I've forgotten all those mathematical problems. Something like 1/10 or half of earth plus 1/10 or and 1/10 and 1/10 of the other elements combined make up the earth. The same way with water, ether, air, fire. The physical body is composed of the gross elements which are formed, you see, gross elements which are formed by fivefold compound of their subtle elements. Now this body has all the elements, earth, air, water, ether and fire, gross elements, and they are composed of subtle elements. It is born through the karma of the previous life and the vehicle of experience for the Atman. You see, you are born, I am born, and we are born in a certain environment, in a certain race, certain parents, and they are all guided by our past karma. You see, heredity, for instance, a particular individual is born of particular parents. It is the karma of the particular individual of the past that brings into the particular parents by the law of affinity, where best that particular individual can express his karmas. So one is born rich or poor, lame or blind or good health, Nobody else is responsible for that difference, those differences. But it is the individual's karma that is the reason for such differences. Is born through the karma of the previous life and is the vehicle of experience for the Atman. You see, Atman is not the body. But this body is the vehicle of experience. We experience this world. The Atman is experiencing. And this is a vehicle. So the experiencer is not the vehicle. This is, as it will be pointed out, this is the house. And the Atman is the householder. You cannot identify this house with the person that is living in the house. So this body should not be identified with the Atman. But this body is given to us in order that the Atman can experience. You see, through experience we learn good and bad. So all kinds of experiences also one has to go through before one can turn towards God. Is born through the karma of the previous life and is a vehicle of experience for the Atman. When the objective universe is being perceived, this is known as the waking state of consciousness. You see, when we see this universe, objective universe, we are awake. Some of you may be asleep now, I don't know. Then you are not perceiving this objective universe. You are not listening to my words also. In the waking state of consciousness, man finds his fullest activity in the body. In this state, he identifies himself with his body. That's ignorance. You see, why he does that? Nobody can explain. It is an inexplainable something that this universal ignorance is there and this identification is there. You see, Shankara, this great seer philosopher, in another place, points out, he says how there's a difference between light and darkness. There's a contrast there. And you cannot confuse the light as darkness, not darkness as light. They're so incompatible. Such contrast is there, light and darkness. The same way with I and thou. The experiencer and the object of experience. And there's no reason why they would be identified and confused one with the other. But through some inscrutable power, this has happened. And this is something universal. Even the greatest intellectual man and the most ignorant man, there is this identification. And this identification has occurred through some inexplainable, inscrutable power. And this power, Shankara calls Maya. It's not an explanation, but it is a statement of facts. That it cannot happen, it should not happen, it must not happen, and yet it has happened. And why has it happened? We don't know. But it has happened. And through that inscrutable power of Maya. In the waking state of consciousness, man finds his fullest activity in the body. In this state, he identifies himself with the body, although he is really separate from it. But he can't help it. Through the external senses, he enjoys gross objects such as garlands, perfumes, women, and so forth, as well as other objects of sense pleasure. So when you are in the waking state, you have all these objects of enjoyment. You must know that this body, through which man experiences this whole external world, is like the house of a householder. It's just an instrument. But unless we identify ourselves with this body, no experience of the outside world is possible. Now, the coming discrimination gradually, how to withdraw the mind again from the external objects. But we have to know that this is what has happened, and this is what is happening, this is what we are doing through our ignorance. The inherent characteristics of this gross body are birth, death, and decay. These are the inherent characteristics of this gross body. You know, when they talk about living forever in this body, you know, when I first came to this country, I saw an ad, millions now living will never die. And so you see this fellow, he was in Los Angeles. He was giving lessons how not to die in body, you know. And then of course you see, as long as he was living, he could preach that, and then when he was dead, nobody could do anything about it. So it's a very safe philosophy to preach. And, you know, it is most unfortunate. Why intellectual people, why people with any little understanding even can believe in that stuff? It's beyond me. The nature of this body is growth, decay, and death. That's inevitable. But the house is old. But you are not old, you are not the house. It has various conditions, such as fatness or thinness, and various stages of development, such as childhood and youth. It is subject to various diseases and to different kinds of treatment, such as worship, dishonor or honor. Somebody worships you, somebody honors you, somebody dishonors you. Your body. You are not affected thereby. You see, that is what he is trying to bring out. You should not be affected. Because the Atman is not affected. Nobody can dishonor the Atman or honor the Atman. It remains the same forever. No change there. Its organs of perception are the ears, skin, eyes, nose, and tongue. Through these, we cognize objects. You see, through these, there are organs of perception and organs of action. Organs of perception are five. Organs of action are five. So organs of perception are the ears, that is hearing, touch, skin, vision, eyes, smell, nose, and tongue, speech. Through these we recognize objects. Its organs of actions are the vocal organs, hands, legs, and the organs of excretion and reproduction. These involve us in action. The mental organ consists of mind, intellect, ego, and the emotional nature. You see, these are different functions. These are distinguished by their different functions. You see, mind, intellect, ego. In Western psychology, mind is everything. But in Eastern psychology, they make distinction. Mind, intellect, ego, and then emotional faculties, emotional nature. These are distinguished by their different functions. The function of mind is to consider the various aspects of an object. You see, first the senses bring to the mind the object. You get a sensation in the mind. Then the function of the intellect is to determine the real nature of an object. You see this. The mind brings it, the senses bring it to the mind. Then the intellect distinguishes it. This is light, an electric light, and separate from this object. Thus there is that discrimination in the intellect. Ego is self-consciousness which arises when the mental organ identifies itself with the body. Then there comes the idea, I, that is, identification with the body is there, I know this object. That is the ego. The tendency of the emotional nature is to draw us to that which is pleasing. That is how emotional nature works, draws us to that which is pleasing. See, it's making a very grand, detailed analysis of all the functions of the body, mind, sense organs and everything. Now again, the vital force is divided according to its five different functions. You see, what we call prana. This prana, or the vital force, it has five different functions. Breath is that function of the vital force which is used in respiration, breathing, in and out, respiration. Downward breath is used in excretion. Distributive breath governs the processes of digestion and assimilation. You see, there is a distributive throughout the body, distributive breath it is called. It governs the process of digestion and assimilation. Diffused breath is present throughout the body, resisting disintegration and holding it together in all its parts. Ascending breath is used in eructation. Just as gold is known by different names when it is fashioned into various ornaments, just as water takes the form of waves, foam, etc., so the one vital force is given these five different names according to its five different functions. They are not separate. It's the different functions of the same principle which is known as the vital force. Eight groups is a little dull, you know. I can't make it more interesting, you see, I have to follow this. It's a little dull, but it's worth knowing, you know. I'm sure you're thinking how dull it is tonight. Eight groups make up the subtle body. You see, there's the physical body. Now there is a subtle body. And what is this subtle body make up of? We have already seen about organs of perception or organs of mind, action, and then mind, intellect, ego, and so forth. So here it is coming. Eight groups make up the subtle body. Five organs of perception, five organs of action, five functions of the vital force, five subtle elements, and the mental organ, together with ignorance, desires, and karma. Very interesting. You see, this group makes up the subtle body, and in the subtle body is the desire, is the karma and ignorance. Where is the ignorance? Not in the Atman. Where is the ignorance? Not in the body. It is in the subtle body. And that subtle body means organs of perception, organs of action, then the mind, the intellect, the ego, these form the subtle body. And five subtle elements, by the way, earth, air, water, ether, fire. You can't see those, but they are the subtle elements combined and recombined make up the gross. So all our desires and karmas and effects of karma are in the subtle body. Just always remember that. That the karmas do not attach themselves to the Atman. No matter what a man may be in his subtle body, wicked or anything, it has not affected the Atman. This subtle body is composed of the subtle elements before they have entered into their fivefold compounds. It is the seat of our desire. It is the field within which the fruits of karma are experienced. The effects of karma are experienced in the subtle body. Because of human ignorance, this subtle body has been superimposed upon the Atman from time without beginning. It's because of ignorance, from beginning, this ignorance has no beginning. From a beginningless time, this ignorance has superimposed this subtle body into the Atman. For instance, the mind is unhappy. And you superimpose that unhappiness on the Atman. Atman is unhappy. I am unhappy. Or I am happy. See, these are superimpositions upon the Atman through ignorance. The Atman, really, in reality, is neither happy nor unhappy. It's always blissful. That's its very nature. The dream state belongs preeminently to the subtle body. It's in the waking state, you see, we are identified with the physical body, subtle body and causal body. We'll come to that causal body later. But in the dream state, we are not identifying with the physical body. We are only identified with the subtle body. In dreams, it creates its own kind of matter and shines with its own light. You see, for instance, in dream also you see things and objects. Where is that light coming from? Where is that vision? Not in the eyes. Just consider. So it is not only with the eyes that you can see, but with the subtle body you can see. You know, we used to make fun when we were young boys in the college, you know, those who used to wear glasses. We would see, now how do you dream without your glasses? So in dreams it creates its own kind of matter and shines with its own light. The mental organ is the storehouse of the many impressions left by our desires in the waking state. See, there is full of impressions, sanskaras we call, not only of our desires and thoughts, but of our actions. Because actions are preceded by thoughts. It is the thoughts, the desires, the thoughts that create the impression. In dreams, the mental organ identifies itself with the sense of ego, and these impressions play over it. But the Atman remains beyond, as always, in its own self-luminous consciousness. At that time, the mental organ is its only covering. The Atman witnesses everything. But it is not in the least contaminated by the dream experiences. It doesn't affect the Atman. It is free forever and untouched. No karma created by its covering bodies can ever contaminate it, even to the smallest degree. What great hope is there for every one of us? No matter what we have done in the past, doesn't matter. Nothing has affected that Atman, my true self, my true being. But I must know that. I must realize that. The conditions of blindness, weakness and keen vision belong to the eye. They are caused by its qualities and defects. In the same way, deafness and dumbness are conditions of the ear and tongue, but not of the Atman, the knower. You know, when they say, for instance, you are the divine child, there cannot be any headache in you. Well, you see, you are the divine child. There is no disease in you, in the Atman, but the head has headache. That's the trouble, you see. But if the divine child identifies itself with the body, with the head, you see, there is no head then. Inhalation, exhalation, yawning, sneezing, the discharge of saliva and the leaving of the body at death are said by those who know to be the various functions of the vital force. Hunger and thirst also are functions of the vital force. That's very interesting, you know. When the body dies, it's the vital force that takes everything, the subtle body and everything, through some aperture of the body. You know, they die either with a sigh or with mouth open or with eyes open. These are higher. They go to higher planes. When the body, life passes through any of these higher apertures. And sometimes, for those who have lived a very dirty life, they pass away with their life function through the lower apertures of the body. And they go to lower lives. Now may I invite questions?
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording.
No, the subject was dull. Now, if you ask interesting questions, I'll try to make it interesting. Go ask something.
If God is dwelling in all of us, if we are like fingers on a hand of God, I really don't understand the why of any of this. What is the point of it all?
But, that's a very interesting question, no doubt. But we have to see facts as they are. God is dwelling in everybody. God is everything. God is everywhere. Do I know it? Do I see? Do I experience it? Mere talks don't help. So I have this ignorance. I have this body. Of course, if I say this body is God, well, the body is decaying, God is decaying. You see, I don't understand then what is meant by God is everything. So we have to put our feet on the ground also and see things as we see and not try to mix up what we hear from people. Try to understand what they say. When they say God is everything, God is all. Wonderful truth. But what is that all? Do I see God as all? Do I see my hair as God? You see? So let us have our feet on the ground. And then say, now they say God is all, but I don't know what God is and what they mean by God is all. And so some analysis, some discrimination, all these are needed. And when the vision opens up, you see, there is not this universe anymore. Your body is not there. They all have disappeared. Then you see God and God and God alone, nothing else. That's a vision that has to open up. If I say my nose is God, God is everything, so my nose is God, of course, you see, I don't understand. That's why they say, hear, but don't stop. Reason. And then meditate. And then go beyond all this ignorance. You see, I say, if you say, I am God, are you? Do you know you are God? You are a finite, limited, mortal human being. That's all you are. That's all you know yourself to be. Now you have to know that you are God. You have to experience that. So there's a big difference between talk and realization and experience. Yes.
Would you agree that the greatest physical sense is touch?
Well, I did not say the greatest physical sense. What is wrong with the smell?
Of the five senses you mentioned.
Yes. They are all equally important. They are equally great if you say great. I don't see anything greater than the others. Touch, smell, hearing, they are all great.
This is my own personal idea.
Well, your personal idea, that's one thing. But I couldn't agree with that.
According to Vedanta, what is sin?
Ignorance.
But there is such a thing as committing sin.
Sure, committing a great mistake. There is a karma, law of karma works. As you sow, so you reap.
Do you take into account motive?
Sure, sure.
Then it might not count as a sin if you didn't mean it?
Motive you have to consider. That's the most important thing in ethical life, in ethics. You may do apparently a good action, but if your motive is bad, it's no good. And if your motive is good and you make a mistake, that's something else. Sure. Motive is the main thing. Because, as we read, where is the, how does the impression form in the mind? Desire, thought, not action itself. But every action is preceded by thought. So it's the motive that counts, very much. That's in Western ethics as well as in Eastern ethics.
But the Christian saints suffer so over their sins.
Well, I don't know. Tell me, who suffered from their sins?
Saint Augustine, for instance, suffers so over his sins. And I don't think he was really a sinful man.
Oh, gee. You see, you know, when I think of Saint Augustine, I think he's wonderful in a way. You see, he was so sincere about it, about everything. He'd pray to God. He was very full of lust, you know. So he'd pray to God, free me from lust, and then he'd whisper, not yet, Lord.
Swami, does the law of karma affect the subtle sheath more than the physical body?
Well, it affects the subtle body first. And what affects the subtle body also affects the physical body. You see, for instance, if the subtle body is grieving, the physical body droops also. It affects. There is a close relationship between the subtle body and the physical body, but it affects the subtle body first.
How can we go beyond the causal body?
Beyond what?
The causal body.
Oh, beyond the causal body, that's in samadhi.
That's only in samadhi.
Yeah. Only causal body. We are in causal body when we are in deep sleep. And then we have just one sheath covering the Atman, the blissful Atman. And that's why again, you see, while we are in deep sleep, there's a happiness there, a peace there. But there's ignorance, darkness. And when we transcend that, that is samadhi. You see, that's why it is called the fourth, waking, dreaming, dreamless sleep, three states. And the fourth we have to reach to go beyond the causal body and attain the knowledge of the Atman.
But we can't do that through sleep, though.
Oh, no. You can't do anything through sleep, no.
If a person has a sense of the beauty of nature and as well has a sense of the transience of nature and uses this to escape the sense of ego...
Beauty at the same time transitoriness. That is, there's beauty at the same time he knows it passes away. Good.
Would you consider this person to be a spiritual aspirant?
Well, even if a man is living in the world and doing worldly duties and enjoying senses, well, he's also moving towards God in a way. To be a spiritual aspirant, you have to consciously and knowingly aspire for God. You see? You may do all that, see the beauty and transitoriness of nature, and whatever happens to you, I don't know. But in order that you can be a true spiritual aspirant, you have to aspire for God, knowingly.
What if a person aspires for God and also has this sense toward nature?
Well, that's all right. If you aspire for God and have that kind of awareness, it's all right. Nothing wrong in that. But be aware of the presence of God more than beauty of nature or things like that. You know, I'll give you an illustration. We are traveling in the Himalayas, pilgrims. And suddenly, we saw sunrise in the Himalayas. That's a sight to see. And we're about 100 pilgrims. And as they saw, they gasped, looking at the beauty. And then they sat down and closed their eyes. You see, that beauty reminded them of the beauty of God. How much more beautiful is God, the Creator, and He is dwelling within the shrine of my own heart. So, they tried to gaze at that beauty of God within the shrine of their hearts. You see, that's the real thing.
Swami, St. Paul didn't aspire consciously toward God, did he?
Oh, why bring poor Paul? Paul said very many beautiful things, but there's a but in my consciousness about Paul. He was not really a disciple of Christ. He never met Christ except in vision. But that doesn't make him a disciple. You can have a vision of Christ. That doesn't make you a disciple of Christ. This is my own personal idea. Christians should not accept my idea. But that is not the point. To me, the disciples are disciples. And Paul was not a disciple. Now tell me what you have to say about Paul. You have nothing to say about him?
Well, he did have a sudden awakening.
Sure, I quite agree. And he said many beautiful things, many beautiful truths.
It must have been through his past karmas.
Yeah, through the grace of Christ.
Why does one man have the vision of God and go out and do magnificent things the way Paul did, for instance, but another man has the vision and doesn't do anything?
Yes, that's true. But what do you think, a man having the vision of God, doing nothing about it? He cannot say he's doing nothing about it.
Well, I mean in the ordinary sense.
Ordinary sense, yes. But then, you see, sometimes, you see, preaching God with words creates more confusion than if a God-man remains silent. I've seen such men remaining silent, taking away your doubts, and they are still helping mankind silently.
How far do these components go in sequences of five, like earth, air, fire, water, and ether? Are they going to go on rotating through this study?
Oh, rotating through this study? No, we just studied that tonight.
I am not speaking derogatorily. I'm just curious about these sequences of five.
Well, they happen to be so. I can't help it.
So the five has no significance?
No. How many pillars are here? Well, but it has no significance. Just we needed as many pillars as to complete this hall. So five elements are there. Five organs of perception, five organs of action. Happens to be so. Om Hari Om, Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahavīryaṁ karavāvahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu, Mā vidviṣāvahai. Om. May Brahman protect us, may He guide us, may He give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace.